Welcome to Forward, a podcast by EasyCare, where we protect what moves you with your host, Corey Smith. The views and opinions expressed by guests in this podcast may not be those of the host or EasyCare and APCO Holdings Brands.
Welcome to Forward. I'm your host, Corey Smith, National Fixed Operations Training Director with EasyCare. Today, we have Robert, who is here to hang out with us for a little bit. And I say we because we have my partner in crime, our co-host extraordinaire, Eric. Welcome to Forward.
You see, now you're making that expectation of co-host extraordinaire, and you know, now I got to pick up the game, Corey. But you know what's more exciting? I'm going to tell you what's more exciting than that. The more exciting is who we have on the show today.
Who do we have, Eric?
Oh man, he is a all-time awesome fixed operations leader. Not manager, not director. The man is a leader. Everybody, please welcome Robert Migliaccio from Valley CMA. Robert, how are you doing today, my friend?
Doing well, gentlemen. I thought Corey was going to attempt the last name there for a minute, and then he kind of froze on me, I think. So
he pitched that right off to me.
It was good, but no, we're doing good. We're doing good.
I pronounced that right. Did I pronounce that?
You did. You got it right, man. You got it right.
That's why Eric's the co-host extraordinaire. I was not going to touch that. No way. Robert,
you can do what most do, Corey. Just run it short and turn it into MIGs, and that's where it goes.
MIGs, yeah, I like that. Robert, tell our audience a little bit about you, high level, how you got in the business, and what are you currently doing right now in your role?
Sure. So this is the start of my 25th year in the business. I've been doing it a good amount of years, obviously. It's crazy to think that. But I started off right out of high school detailing and kind of worked everything in the fixed operations side of the world. So detailing cars, running the detail department, parts driver, wholesale, retail counter, shop counter, system parts manager, and then turned over to the service side, did service advisor, service manager, parts and service director, fixed ops director. And then now I'm currently helping oversee multiple stores at our CMA Valley location. We got 5 total stores. I got 3 managers right now at the stores, 2 of which I mentor. The other 3 stores I help pretty much handle the day-to-day operations with the management of it.
Wow. And you spent this whole time with the same dealership or how long?
So I've been, the last 3 years I've been with CMA. In the time I was there, I started out in the German world, worked for BMW for 14 years, for my first stint of the parts and service side of it. Outside of that, been at probably about 4 groups total. Was up north, New Jersey, Pennsylvania area is kind of where I'm from. And then within the last 3 years, we moved down here and I've been here since.
Oh, wow. That's a great, great story. Thanks for sharing that. So this episode's titled The Fixed Operations Talent Crisis, How to Attract and Keep the Top Service Advisors. So let's just jump right into it, Robert. What do you see as the biggest barrier to attracting top talent to service advisor roles, and how can the industry overcome it?
I think a lot of the barriers that we run into or we see a lot of the times is just the understanding of the position itself and what it actually is, especially for a service advisor, and how lucrative it can actually become. You know, you can do very well in that position as long as you have the drive and the go ahead to really kind of do it. It's a great position to be fulfilled. It's, I think, the hardest position within the dealership. Most will kind of give a credit to. And, you know, you take a lot to be out there, but top talent wise, it's just a matter of really kind of sharing what the company can offer, I think, given all the features of what they want to kind of show and showcase for each dealer group independently here. So for us, it's a lot of training, a lot of mentoring, a lot of growth, a lot of opportunity, showing that there's a career path outside of just what you're currently doing.
And I think that's what the new employee really wants to see, where, you know, I consider myself an old guy, right? I'm almost 50. You tell me you do this, you get paid more money, I'm going to go do it. Your new employee now that you're seeing, to your credit, what you were just talking about, they want to see a career path. They want to have an input on processes. They want to be mentored. They want an extra day off, not more money, right? A lot of the things that we had to adjust and kind of, you know, come up with on the fly. So is that how you guys are overcoming in your industry what you're dealing with right now?
I feel so, more so with CMA for when I got here. The biggest part of what they kind of showcased and kind of showed me was it was more than just a pay plan. Pay plans will get people so far, but even what you said, Corey, just setting it up in a position where we instill that we want to see them grow. So, you know, for me and for us, you know, something I never did until I got here, and now we do it across the board with all the stores and all of our team members is, you know, asking them to fill out a form at the beginning of the year. I shouldn't say form, but fill out a kind of a questionnaire of the three personal, three professional goals. So not only are they in line with what they want to do with themselves, we can align ourselves with what they want to do for themselves also. So if the goal is to purchase a car, purchase a house within the next 12 months, you know, we have some buttons that we can push to help them see and focus on those things and ways that we can kind of self-train to help get them there. So, you know, if an advisor's, you know, looking to buy a house, you know, how can you maximize your pay plan then in order to benefit and put away as much money as you need for a down payment or costs associated with owning a home? And then professionally knowing where they want to be so that way we can train to that level as well. If they want to be a future service manager, okay, this is what it's going to take to do that. Here's the road you got to take. Here's the things you're going to have to do. And not only do you have to do it, but you kind of have to, you know, step up when you need to and really kind of show that you want that as well. So it's been changing because that's not something I really had in the past in that regard. You know, I always had kind of mentors, always had kind of people telling me to do more, want more, but never had anybody kind of really lead the way and say, hey, what do you want? And let me help you get there. So,
yeah, it sounds like what you're saying is for the industry to really overcome, you know, getting the top talent, it's your value, core values of the business, what we can offer you, not more than just like, you know, health benefits and 401k, everybody's got that, right? Mm-hmm. But that career path and having them fill out that questionnaire like you were talking about, I think that's genius. I think that's a great way to see and make sure that we're all on the same page. Here's what I want as I'm an advisor. Okay, now I can match what you want with what we need, and then I can mentor you throughout every step of that throughout the course of the year. I love that.
And the nice part is it's a moving target too, because if they reach a goal, we can reset a new one and just keep going from there. So as they reach points, it's not like it's just checking off a box and they're done. If we reach that point, now it's a push to say, all right, you know, you reached this objective for yourself and you got that goal handled. So what are we going to put in place of that now? You hit that. So what can we add to it and really kind of push? So I enjoy it. I enjoy it for myself. I didn't realize I did as much as I did. And it really helps me kind of push that down the line to make sure that my other team members are doing the same thing.
Yeah.
Now, Robert, I see you doing some amazing things. And to me, when I see that, now we had this conversation, I think it was at NADA 2024. And one of the things I love about you is how well you stay connected with the current time and position. And one of the questions I have for you is, how has the perception of the service advisor changed over the years, and what can dealerships do to elevate its appeal to potential hires?
Yeah, definitely. So I think before, and you know, I'd say we're probably all at an age where we were around it, you know, it was very much a brunt, rough kind of position where it was just take orders and I'm going to sell you the world kind of situation, or that stigma of what the automotive advisor was in that position. I've always pushed for it, and I think it's definitely where the titles of it is going. It's an advisory role at that point in time. So I'd like to tell the advisors, you're like a financial advisor at the end of the day. You're really trying to help people in cure how they're going to spend their money and what they're going to do with it. So, you know, for them to get top talent in that regard to that, it's really seeing that it's more than just the process of presenting work and talking to customers. It's building that empathy with them. It's working through, you know, getting that one-on-one connection and really kind of growing a customer base for yourself, kind of a business within a business in that essence of it. You know, that you're going to create your own book of clients that are going to come back and request you is the goal at the end of the day. So it's, I think the forefront of it would probably be the most challenging right now is there's so much technology involved. So getting people to understand that, you know, the technology is a good thing. You know, video multipoints are a positive thing to use. You know, proper walkarounds with the customers is an ideal thing to do to get the customer involved, engaged, and really understand that you're there to assist and help them, not be a barrier or a problem for why they're there.
Now I'm going to go into the Robert Book of Secrets. You ready for this? Now I'm going to ask you to bring some of those secrets out. What specific quality or skills do you look for when you're hiring service advisors? And how do you identify candidates who will thrive in their role?
So for me, I grew up, so when I first started, I was doing automotive in the morning, and I was doing restaurant work in the evening. So I was two job man. Wow. So I was trying to keep myself. And I always found that the two married very well together. You kind of did the same concept of what you're doing with the customer base in each position at the restaurant or working at the auto dealership. You really kind of have that same input with what you're doing with the customer. So for me, I look for that quality of engagement. I like to kind of free roll the interview process when the employee's coming in or the candidate's coming in to see, you know, how they engage in just general conversation sometimes, not so much these one-on-one bullet point, how would you do this? How would you do that kind of stuff? But, you know, tell me about yourself. Tell me what you do. Tell me what you like to do. And almost kind of get into a role play position where you're communicating with them and get them to open up and really have them have the control of the interview. So you can really start to get a good feel for that person when they come out. I highly, highly enjoy those people that come out of the auto, at the restaurant world, coming to the automotive, just because they bring that natural charisma to them and in handling those situations and whatnot. So, you know, I really do enjoy those candidates the best, and, you know, really seeing them grow within that position is huge for me, because I guess it's just a little piece of my nostalgia to myself as well, but also to kind of see them take what they do and make it their own in a different profession is pretty cool.
Yeah, I love that. So I'm going to ask you a question, Robert.
All right.
What do you like to do outside of work?
Well, those that follow me would probably find out. So I took some time to reflect over the last couple of years since I've been down here, and I'm not the tallest person if you meet me in real life. So for the sport I decided to play and choose to play basketball, it's quite hilarious in my head a lot of times, but. I just love the competitive nature of basketball. I love playing it. The physicality of it, everything is what I love to do. So if I'm not playing basketball, I'm with the family. We work around the house, we hang out, and it's really just been them or some solitude playing basketball and getting away from everything in that regard. That's kind of my woosah moment. You know, when I'm out, that's what really kind of takes me away from everything and gets me a clear head. But family first, really. I mean, if I'm not at work, I'm home the majority of the time, and trying to get back to them with being away as much as I tend to be with this business. So we're trying to shift our culture, get away from that a little bit, make sure we're taking our time and everybody's getting their dues at home, as well as putting forth the effort at the job as well. But that is where you'll find me if you need to see me. I'm usually there about 3-4 days a week. I'm out there playing basketball.
I know I admire it from afar, because you get there really early, right? It's like 5 o'clock.
Yeah, we start at 5:30 in the morning. So we get it all in before we even start the day. And I luckily live close to where we play, and I live close to my job. So I am there, home, put together, back to the store before it even opens. So I'm still there opening the store up and everything.
Well, good. When you were, you know, telling us all, you know, answering the question and asking the advisor different questions to really pull out of them, right? That kind of jumped into my head. I'm like, oh, I got to ask him what he does, right?
Right. Exactly. So. It just gets you going. But those are the kind of questions, like, you know, really understanding where people are from. Obviously, I know we have our HR abilities. We can ask certain questions. You can't ask certain questions. But I think you'd be surprised if you probe the right way, you can get them to open up and give you some input and information about what really kind of drives them at the end of the day. And again, I think it circles back to those goals being set, because it allows us to align with what they're looking for. So if our goal is to be at this place and they don't align with that, maybe it's not a good fit for them. Sometimes helping them transition isn't necessarily working with us specifically. It may not be a good fit for us. And I think that's a hard part that we got to kind of cope with sometimes too, is really kind of turning down a good candidate because it's not a good fit for you, the store, the culture, or even that person directly.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. And so let's just talk about it and get it out in the open. Let's talk about money. Compensation is often cited as a reason for high turnover, right? I'm leaving this place to go to this place because I'm going to get paid more money. What innovative pay plans or benefits have you seen that effectively attract and retain service advisors?
So this is where I got to give some kudos, and hopefully that's all right on here. But for CMA, for us specifically, the company is an ESOP. For those that don't know what that is, that's an employee stock ownership program. So CMA provides 26% of the bottom line earnings back to the employees at the end of the year. And we're vested in that. So the only thing we put in is time. Obviously, the work we do throughout the year at all the stores increases our profitability in that aspect of it and allows us to kind of venture away from it. The nice part about where I am now and some of the things we do is we definitely look long term, more so than just in the moment. So, you know, taking care of the technicians, we have longevity bonuses that we pay them for being around with us, where we pay them out for their hours turned throughout the year as a bonus at the end of the year that's paid for by us. It's not money set aside from their own payroll. We have our Myers Flyers, which is for our top producers throughout parts service and sales to allow them to kind of earn some monetary stuff, but also some recognition throughout the company. And then pay plan wise, I think really the innovativeness of it is we've adapted probably different models per employee. It's been a big point of what we've been looking at. We're still trying to push the same focal points, whether it's a technician or an advisor. But talking about the advisor role specifically, you know, we kind of meet the employee where they need to be sometimes. If they're, you know, not everybody's bred out for 100% commission in some cases. So we have some flex pay kind of options that we do in there to help suffice that employee base and give them some markers that they need to hit in order to help them kind of push themselves and do better and do more. Some of them are just pure sharks and out there to kind of get it. And, you know, they'll opt to go into a full commissional based pay for us where we pay them pretty much for all the hours they turn. So they're set up to be paid similar to our technicians. So that way they all have a common goal and a common practice throughout the whole business. So they're selling hours, the technicians are selling hours. And at the end of the day, all that structure outside of that, it comes from me and the company. So they don't really have a lot of control on that. So the hours are where they really kind of dig in and dive in pretty well. So
I love all that stuff. That, I mean, I can see why that would keep some top talent. I mean, the longevity bonus, you know, the ESOP is all great. So that's some good stuff. If you're not doing that currently at your dealership, you might want to start thinking about it.
And thank you for sharing that information, because that's, you know, that's a strong culture to have in your store. And that's a good way to keep somebody long term, which is great. But when you're onboarding and you've got the new service advisor that you're training, how do you ensure that they feel equipped? How do you ensure that they feel valued at such an early time when they're starting in their CMA career path?
Now, this is actually a great question. We did this company-wide recently, and we actually found out that's huge. You know, one of the biggest things isn't so much, you know, staying with the company. It's when you first start with the company, how do you get through those hurdles in the beginning? Obviously from a management level and whatnot, even just some of the other lead roles in the store, everybody's there to support and kind of grow. But I give our HR department a lot of kudos in this. They've actually developed a new plan and they're heavily involved in our onboarding. One, they give us a strict time slot of how fast we can onboard somebody. So they do want to make sure that we are not onboarding somebody some fast and not having any other credentials or anything that they need handled. But the outside aspect of that is certain people within our HR group are actually following up with those employees after the fact on top of what we're doing at the dealer level.
Wow.
And following up with those employees to check in to see if they have everything they need, if everything's going well, if there's any issues or problems as well. So kind of like a safe haven little place for them to kind of speak their mind outside of what's going on directly in front of them. And obviously, at the end of the day, I mean, comes down to probably the store manager, myself, or the GM, whoever's in the store daily, to constantly keep checking in. I like to do pretty regularly throughout the onboarding in the first couple of weeks, being you know, kind of an everyday touch point, make sure everything's good, and then start kind of spacing it out a little bit. And I think until you get to that 3, 6, 9 month range, and then at that point you kind of get a good feel if they've come that long, you've gone that far. I think at that point you've got a good bite both ways and everybody's kind of be sticking around for a while.
I love that. Yeah. I mean, you touched upon this earlier. So if we shift this up a notch, what roles does career growth play in retaining top talent? And how can dealerships create a clear path for advancement within the service department or within the dealership? Like, your path was, I started washing cars, right? And then I ran the detailing department. Then I drove parts truck. And then I was a service advisor. And then a service manager, and so forth and so on, right? So can you give us kind of like a how-to, right, when it comes to that role and that career path within the service, even if it's outside the service department?
Yeah, no. So we do it a little bit company-wide. Everybody in some way, shape, or form can get a role, a path to a GM, an owner, executive manager of the company. And whatever you want to aspire to, we can put something together on it. I think the big part in what you're asking and what you're saying is, I think it's logistically actually putting it down on paper for them. Give them something to look at, whether it's posted or put it on paper, something that they can look at and hold and have and call their own and know what they need to do. And it doesn't always need to be the monetary movements of it as well. It doesn't need to be dollars for advancements. And sometimes, right, a lot of cases, it's the prestige or the concept of what they're going to be doing. So, you know, from an advisor to a lead advisor role, maybe there's some accountability there where you're now the training instructor for the advisors, or, you know, something like that. But the big part I saw now, you know, you referenced myself. I didn't have that. And I think a lot of us didn't have that growing up. There wasn't really a career path for us. It was more, you know, you saw what you wanted, and if you wanted to go for it, you went for it. If you didn't, you were what you were. And I mean, I think that's just is what it is. But now, like you said, you know, with the newer generation and where we're at, trying to give them that helps them kind of see what they need to do. So, you know, for us, and, you know, I'll use the technicians right now, it's a little bit easier for me on them. You know, you have ABC technicians, and setting that career path on where they go from those levels of technician and clearly identifying what they need to do to get to those next levels is the big thing. So what training do you need to do? You know, what can you be doing in the shop to show us, you know, your leadership and growth as well? You know, what do you want at the end of the day? Do you actually want to be that? Do you want to be there? And if it ultimately just comes down to just the dollars and cents of it, you know, then here's how you have to get there. If this is what you want to do, you want to be a top rated senior master and making what you're making, then, you know, here's where we're at to get you there. And this is what you need to do. And this is what we'll do to kind of combat that for you and help get you where you need to go. But I think it's just a strong focal point on actually just putting it out there, however you decide to do it. It's posting it on the wall. I know a couple auto groups do it a little differently, and I've seen some other people do it out there. And that seems to be the biggest piece of it from what I've got, is actually putting it on paper seems to work a little bit better than just a conversation piece. Because if I tell you, if you do these things for me, Corey or Eric, and you'll be here, do you remember it after you're done? Or, you know, but if I put it on paper and we both look at it, we both kind of sign it, there's some ownership between both of us to get you there. And I think that helps out and kind of playing that out.
Yeah, it holds people accountable. The automotive industry is competing with other sectors for talent. And, you know, especially with technicians, they can go to other dealerships. They can go to be an HVAC, right, technician, a number of different sectors. What lessons can we learn from other industries that excel at attracting and retaining skilled workers?
I think in the other skills, as much as it seems, you know, they're very scoped on, and this is going to be my personal opinion, I think it's more scoped on the work hours of the work hours. When you're done, and you're home. And those tend to be a little bit more structured in a lot of the other outside avenues. I think there's some issues in places where, you know, HVAC, plumbing, and other trades like that kind of have some emergency visit kind of situations. But for the most part, you know, technicians and advisors, we ask them to work 12, 13, 14 hours, you know, most days. And a lot of them work through their lunches, whether that's by choice or because, you know, the culture has kind of created that.
Yeah. I miss plenty of lunches.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think when we start putting that back into them, that, you know, you encourage them to, you know, take their lunch break. You encourage them to take their time. You encourage them to go, you know, watch the soccer game for their child or something like that, and step in and allow them to leave for an hour or two to go watch it. I think you see a lot of people kind of tend to understand that you see them as a person and not a number. And I think that's huge. I think that's where we really kind of win people over, is when we stop just putting a number to the person and what they can produce for us. But at the end of the day, we know you have a life and a family, or whatever it is at home that you have. You have other stuff that's outside of here that's just as important as being here with us.
You're speaking powerful words and messages with it. And I know that's going to connect with a lot of people, especially that statement there is enormous. Now, we spoke about, you know, the beginning part, right? The how do you keep somebody that you're onboarding? And then you got the long term, right, for the employees being invested into your companies. But how do you foster a culture that keeps service advisors engaged, that keeps them motivated, keeps them loyal, especially in the high pressure environment that we're in? And I'm talking, you know, after that 9 months and in between those 3 to 5 years, going through those day to day, you know, those missed lunches, just coming in early, staying late, that high type of pressure. But how do you do that?
And this is where, you know, I don't eat my I eat my words on myself here, and I don't kind of practice what I preach it much. And you know, I spend probably more majority of my time at work than I do at home a lot of the time. So I personally feel like we got to be in the trenches with them. I think as a company, as managers, as other department leaders throughout the store, if the lack of care is there, where you're just finding yourself, you know, showing up when you show up, if it's later in the day than they are, and you're cutting out before they leave a lot of the times, yeah, I think that just shares that your culture is that they're there for you, not you're there for them. And that's been huge for me. You know, case in point, recently, you know, we had a snowstorm recently here in Virginia that kind of hit us pretty hard. And, you know, it doesn't happen a lot here for the area that we're in. And the first thing we all did is as the top leaders was get everybody out of there, get them home, get them safe. Like your role is get them home, get them safe, and get them out of here. So I think as you go through that and you keep engaging with them and stay with them, you can't forget the ones in the middle at the end of the day. I think we have to still engage with them just as much. I think we have to encourage the one-on-ones just a little bit more, whether it's, I want to say it's not even business related. I think just taking the time to sit them down, talk to them, and stay consistent with, again, you know, like I said, for us specifically, staying consistent with their goal sets and taking time to talk to them one-on-one, but not make it about the business itself. I think as long as we keep showing the care, showing the growth, and showing the investment back to them, I think regardless of the other stuff that's going on, the commitment level kind of grows there, because I think it just becomes natural. You almost that family atmosphere that most people say that they're looking for in regards to it. You just come, you know, you want to support them. You want to help them. They want to support you. They want to help you. And that's kind of where I've seen the biggest growth in helping retain people stay, is they want to work for me, not because I'm the greatest boss or I do things well, or I'll even say I don't, you know, I pay them the best. You know, it's not all those things, but in some regards, it's, I treat them appropriately while they're there, and I stay with them. And if there is a trenches situation, I'm out there with them. It's not, I'm cutting out, it's 5 o'clock, my day's over, you guys go ahead and hold it down kind of thing.
Right. I'm out. Right.
Yeah.
I love that. So we've talked about this, and you brought it up earlier, is the advisor role is the hardest job in the dealership, right? And I think you've touched upon work-life balance. We try to preach that here at Easy Care. I'm always telling Eric, and we joked about it before Eric came into the show. He's like, you travel as much as Eric? I'm like, I do, but I don't. And I try to tell Eric not to, but Eric has selective hearing, and he just likes to be in a hotel, you know, 18 days in a row.
You know what's important? You know what? Here's what's important about that. He understands my work-life balance, right? Yeah. My work balance is I love to work. That's it. So that's what it's about. I love the leadership.
I do too. I mean, we have a focus group, you know, that we get up and say, I'm a workaholic, and everyone says me too, right? On a serious note, what roles does work-life balance play in attracting and keeping top-tier talent as advisors, and how do you address it at your dealership right now?
So to top-tier aspects of it, I think that shows the culture is different at that location than others would boast. Again, I worked at a number of auto groups, and you know, no issues or qualms with them. It was not so much a I felt like I had to be there 6 days a week. I'll put it that way. At most places, I had to be there, open to close. I had to be there 6 days a week. If I wasn't, I was in jeopardy of whatever I thought I was in jeopardy of. And that could have just been my perception of it. But working where I'm at now, when I'm with CMA, like, I don't have that feeling. If I'm working 6 days a week, they're like, go home. It's like, no, I'm good. Like, I got stuff to do. Like, I choose to do it. And that's for me. But I think the balance of it is when you offer it and you have it out there to them, it allows them to understand, again, that you have them labeled as a person more than anything. And it really kind of embodies what they're looking for at the end of the day. I mean, advisors, technicians, they're all rough and rugged sometimes and kind of stern faced when you talk to them. And,
no,
you know, I don't have time for you right now. I barely got time to eat my lunch. I got six waiters and, you know, so the conversation happens, but you know, if you have fun with it and whatnot, I think it can help the day go. But I really do. I got to just keep kind of going back to that. I think it's just feeling like a person and a human being more than anything.
Yeah, I think part of it, and I hope people take this to heart, is that talking about it, being open about it, about work-life balance, not just having it written down on a piece of paper, but actually, you know, Eric knows, you know, what the process is. Am I going to get mad at him if he doesn't? No. I think he sleeps standing up, right? he works really, really hard, and that's his why, right? He loves doing what he does. You know, but I still talk about it. I still remind him, hey, you got to be home. Why don't you take this weekend off? Right. If we can at least be with our people and at least have that open dialogue. And to your point, I want to be here. I want to do it. Right. It's not that I have to. Right. Or I'm in jeopardy that I'm going to lose my job because they make me feel insecure. Right. Now that I want to be here.
Yeah, no. And, you know, it's important to talk about these things. And this kind of leads into the question that I have for you. Is, you know, everybody talks about potential hires, right? And I took this a long time ago when I was hiring. One of the people that I was working with in a growing group told me, you know, potential hires, are you looking at potential hires in the next 3 to 6 months? Or are you looking at potential hires over the next 10 years? How are you preparing yourself? And I laugh at myself because I was in the office today and I heard my son got home from school. And as I walk out to say hello to him, he's got some Meta glasses on and he's in a virtual world. And I go, hey, MJ, how you doing? Hi, Dad. But he's, you know, he's in his world. And I ask you this question. For now and for the future, can technology and automation help reduce the workload for advisors? And can it make the role more appealing to those potential hires?
I think wholeheartedly that is a huge step for us. You know, having fun with AI, and I think every platform we work with right now has some form of AI attached to it. I was texting, prime example, I was texting a customer today to give them an update. And it automatically AI generated here's our response and how we would say it. And I was like, man, I type amateur. Let me tell you, like I can't get the words right at all. I was like, so I found myself hitting the AI button on almost everything I was writing that day, you know, today. And it was just it was a piece of work, but it does. And we helped and partnered with a group. And I apologize, I can't think of the name right now, but they actually came out and demoed for us at our service director meeting. And it was, it started through a prison, but then it kind of grew from there and went out and it was in getting involved in it. And it was putting virtual reality into these guys to help teach them how to work on vehicles. So it was actually a case program where they would go through, do an oil change on a car all virtually, and it would grade them on their efficiency of how they did the job and how they did it in order based on the procedure that they were trained to do.
Wow.
So I think it's cool because as we bring people up into the industry, we can kind of showcase them and show them different things like that in AI and allow them to really kind of get on board with if it's a career they want or if it's something that they're kind of looking at. But I think the AI features, you know, definitely for advisors, I think it helps with proper writing. You know, there's plenty of vendors out there for the technicians as well that do, you know, the automated writing for them for warranty jobs and stuff like that. So I think it definitely does help. And I think it's huge, especially as we go into this generation, like your son. My son's the same way. He runs around the house thinking he's a gorilla in his headgear that he has in the one game he plays. So it's where they want to be. Again, it's meeting them where they want to be, I think, is the big thing. And if we're technology-based, I think it helps bring those technology partners together with us, you know, in the culture of the next generation of people coming up and what they're doing. Cause at the end of the day, I mean, we're just typewriters for the most part as a service advisor. I mean, we're just typing away on everything. So I think it helps a little bit on that regard of it.
Now we're going to get into a part that I like to talk about. I love action. I love things happening, right? So what are three takeaways in your mind? Anyone listening can take and put into action starting today?
That's a great question, man. I love it. Let's go with, all right. So I would say number one, no particular order. We'll go that way too. Number one would be, let's take the time to know your team. Get to actually know them. Find out their whys, find out what's driving them, sit them down and get on board with what their whys are so you can help push them. Second is exactly what Corey was saying. Take the time for yourself and help them take the time for themselves as well. A happy home life definitely changes the kind of staff that we have, as well as our demeanor ourselves as leaders and how we kind of react. If, you know, if we're having a bad day, how's that kind of portray down and whatnot? So I think that's a clean takeaway to have a positive perspective when you're there. So that way it doesn't negatively affect your staff or your customers, more so your customers, I guess, than anything. And number three, I would say, don't be afraid to change. Don't be afraid to ruffle the feathers on what you're doing. Let's change this industry. Let's have fun with it. Let's make it different. Let's make it the place where people want to come to work and not just a last ditch effort that they think it is. And in some cases, I feel like we're still, not looked at as the right course as a trade. I think we're still treated independently and people still want to kind of see the college life and the big Wall Street kind of living, but you can get that doing the automotive world the same without all the pressures of all that stuff, man. And it's been pretty cool. So I enjoy this world.
Oh man, Robert, you're giving me chills. Those are great takeaways. If you did not write that down, rewind it and listen to it again. Gold, Jerry. Those are gold, right?
If I was an audience of 500, you'd have a standing ovation right now.
All right.
Right. Nice job. Nice job. How can people get in touch with you?
So I'm all over the place. I'm on Facebook. I'm on LinkedIn. Oh, geez. Where am I? Facebook, LinkedIn, Instagram, I'm on TikTok. If you just hit the hashtag #MixTakeOver, you'll probably find me somewhere. I got it tagged everywhere, but that's the easiest way to find me. But all in all, just look me up. I'm available. I love this industry. I love talking to people. I love helping people. And that's what I think it's all about. So
that's great. EasyCare is a total performance provider working alongside your team to help achieve your goals in F&I and across the dealership. We're an award-winning provider and administrator of F&I products and can provide the tools, knowledge, and training needed to unlock the potential of your dealership. For more information on EasyCare or to be a guest on Forward, please feel free to send me an email at csmith@apcoholdings.com. Robert, that is all the time that we have for today. Thank you, thank you, thank you so much for being on this episode. And I'll ask this last question, like I ask every guest. Will you please come back?
100%, man. Always here for you guys.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to Forward, a podcast brought to you by EasyCare with Corey Smith. Be sure to like and subscribe to the podcast. New episodes are released on the 5th and 20th of every month.